It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. As has been discussed today, the economy is critical. I would suggest that one of those lubricants to the economy is water, and we'll take just a few minutes today to talk a little bit about that. This graph is not nearly as interactive as Ken Bullock's, but the result is the same. Our population will double in the next 40 years or so. How will we meet this municipal and industrial water demand? I think there are three ways that will help us do that. The first is to protect what we have. That means our current infrastructure and supplies. Use it wisely. Conservation is critical. We'll play a key role in that. And thirdly, with a doubling of the population, I think it would be obvious that there will be some additional supplies that will be necessary. One thing I would like to point out is that in spite of the effort or the interest we have in water, I would like people to understand that the model we have in Utah has worked well. This graph shows a GAO study of the 50 states. Eight are states that GAO believes will not have water shortages in the next 10 years. Interesting, one of those is Utah. I would suggest what we have done in the past has worked well, or we would not be in this position. One of the things that has happened over the course of time in Utah is that we've had tremendous assistance from the federal government in building large storage facilities. These large facilities include reservoirs such as Strawberry Reservoir, Jordanelle, Deer Creek, Pine View, some of those large reservoirs that carry us through, frankly, a year like this, wherein we would have shortages but for that federal infrastructure. The Central Utah Project, for example, began construction in 1964. It took 23 years before we were able to deliver water. But for the tax structure that we have, that project would never have been built. Today, that project provides for water for about 300,000 to 350,000 people in the Wasatch Front. 25% of the Central Utah water supply has not yet been delivered, and that will occur over the next 20 years. These projects take a long time, and there has to be some stability in how they're funded, how they're repaid, and how they're constructed. I'll skip a couple of these due to time. We have created recently a center by the four large water conservancy districts, Central Utah, Jordan Valley, Weber Basin, and Washington County, which represent over 85% of the state's population. We were given a task to come up with a statewide infrastructure plan that would do two things: not limit economic growth, and would support population growth. We see ourselves as implementers. We're not policymakers. Of the growth that will occur over the next 50 years, 85%+ of that is our own children and grandchildren. We went basin by basin to determine what would be necessary to maintain our current water supplies, as well as where there would be additional waters necessary in order to satisfy those future demands. This arrow on the right, this blue arrow on the right, I know you can't read that number, is 371,000 acre feet of water. The red line going up is our water demand in the future, assuming we have no conservation. The blue line that goes through the middle represents what we will need with a 25% reduction in the water that we use today. That 371,000 acre feet of water primarily will come from new projects that I'll talk about in just a second. Conservation is absolutely critical. There is no way we'll be able to satisfy what we have demand for in the future without conservation. We all will and must do a better job of using our water wisely. Conservation isn't free, but it will be a key piece of this puzzle. The infrastructure needs, as we determined through this study, show that there will be two components. One, replacing existing infrastructure. Unlike Linda, who can show a highway with cracks and with bridges that are falling apart, the infrastructure we talk about is buried. We don't see it. We don't drive by it every day. We don't, in some cases, even know it's there. And so that's a challenge that we have in the water community. $18 billion will be needed over the next 50 years to replace that infrastructure. Much of that is, frankly, federal infrastructure. How many of you think the feds are going to repay for that replacement of that facility? I'm not a believer either, so that's why I'm going to put my hand down. We will do that locally. It will have to be done locally. That infrastructure, all of it, 50 years from now, will be 50 years older. Some of it has been in the ground over 50 years now. This happens to be a picture of the Olmsted flow line near the mouth of Provo Canyon. Tremendous expense to repair and replace those facilities. The new infrastructure that will be necessary to meet those future needs, that 371,000 acre-feet of water, will come principally from two state water projects, compact water projects. The majority of the Colorado River water that we use in Utah comes through the Central Utah Water Conservancy District, the Central Utah Project. There's still some remaining water in the Colorado River that will be used as a state project to help meet future growth. A majority of that water, frankly, new water, will come from the Bear River, about 220,000 acre-feet of water. How do we pay for this? First of all, the water conservancy districts will bear a major portion of this. The water conservancy districts have mechanisms through property taxes, through rates, and through impact fees that we can use to come up with that. Those mechanisms will be crucial to help us solve this challenge. Other revolving funds that the state have will be helpful. The cities and municipalities will be responsible for some of that. What we have proposed, and what I'll talk about in just a second, is an additional revolving fund that will help pay for these state water projects and help pay for replacement of the federal infrastructure. Rates will go up. There is absolutely no question that rates will go up and will go up significantly. In some cases, multiple times, they will go up to satisfy these needs. All of this, of course, will be repaid by the water users. This is a funding mechanism. Just like we do with the Central Utah Project, the water users pay back the cost of the facilities that are associated with M&I water. Last year, we were successful with Senator Adams and many others in creating this revolving fund that in which monies could be put that will help establish a fund that can pay for the costs of these state water projects and rehabilitation of the federal projects. Again, we're implementers. We see ourselves as facilitating growth that will come, projects that will be necessary, water that will be necessary after we conserve all we can. There will still be a need for more. And I'll conclude with that. If you have any questions after, I'd be happy to talk to you. Thank you.
My mother taught me to not wear a hat indoors, and I'm wearing a hat indoors. It's not just because I'm odd, although I am, ask Kelsey. I try and keep air conditioning off of my face, so that's the scarf, that's the hat, because air conditioning gives me migraines. But I thought I'd risk a migraine to be able to come and say a few things. I was in Ronald Reagan's Department of the Interior in 1983, and we were having a meeting with the Commissioner of Reclamation, and he came and he was laying out all of the projects that needed to be done to meet the future demand. And we raised our hand and said, but what would happen if you just raised the price and let markets allocate water? And he slammed his fist on the desk and said, I've heard enough from you kiddie car economists. Our job is to make the desert blossom as a rose, and we're going to do it. Now, his last name was Broadbent. He was from Clark County, Nevada. He did go to church in Brigham Young's church. So he was really seriously trying to make the desert blossom as a rose, but he did not want to hear about any conversations about who should pay and about water pricing. Seeing a demand curve without prices tells you absolutely nothing. We don't know what future demand would look like if we raised prices sufficiently. You know, it's so nice to be able to say, like Danny DeVito did in Other People's Money, I love money. I especially love other people's money. And the water infrastructure people in Utah have become that way. They want other people's money. They want property taxes. They want general fund monies created by the legislature. And what that does is it creates a really inefficient water system. It's a system that encourages people to use too much, and encourages building infrastructure that is not necessary, and amazing distortions by using other people's money instead of having those who actually get the benefits pay for the costs. It may sound harsh, but people who water their lawns should pay for that water. Look at the difference between Salt Lake City's lawns and Tucson's. In Tucson, you pay a whole bunch more for water than you do in Salt Lake City. So in Salt Lake, we can afford to water outdoors. If users have to pay the true cost of their use, they will conserve. Now, driving from Logan here, there's a billboard. I think it's a Weber Basin Conservancy District board that says, unmetered doesn't mean unlimited. If you don't meter something and charge based on how much you're using, how are you can preach, you can require people to install low flow toilets, you can do other sorts of things like that, but you're not really going to affect behavior. By the way, Sacramento is one of the cities in California facing water shortages. 50% of Sacramento is unmetered. There's plenty of water in California, but it's priced badly, and we don't allow markets to work that would allow water to move from one sector to another. There are some really nice studies that have been done. One that was done by the Utah Rivers Council on water conservancy districts, and another by Del Gardner, Professor Emeritus at Brigham Young University. And those show that water districts can survive just fine based on user fees, but those fees have to go up, and the districts have to change their view of how you prepare for the future. By the way, if you cannot get a bank to give you a bond for the future, that tells you that what you're trying to do is uneconomic. If it's uneconomic, it probably shouldn't be done. It is also probably not good for the environment. So if the bank won't loan you the money, that's one of the greatest signals you can have. That's why water infrastructure folks go to the legislature, is because they don't want to be told no by a banker. So a couple of final comments. If you want to allocate water and actually be able to plan for the future, the first thing you do is you price water at its true supply cost. That pricing will cause conservation. Don't separate the supply price from the supply cost. And if you want to encourage people to use too much water, just use property taxes and general fund taxes to pay for their water. They will overuse, and we'll end up with infrastructure that we don't need. Thanks.